Taunt, say hello and welcome. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Today, we continue our conversation with Julia McDougall of Mikisew Cree First Nation in Northern Alberta. With the help of your impact to their lives as well, to walk across and grace that stage to also accept the Eagle Feather, but you've also done a lot of involvement with the Full Circle Mentoring Program with Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Wood Buffalo back in 2009, which is still being offered to students today. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement within the Full Circle Mentoring Program?
Well, that was back in 2009, like you said. I was still working at the high school, at Constant High, and some gentleman that was working for the Wood Buffalo, the community center anyway, they had a grant for, an X amount of money. They had a grant, and then they were trying to pull committee members, community members together, and they wanted to start a little program. So that's what we did. We sat together as a committee member. We had an elder sit with us, and then we talked, we discussed what should be, offered, because in some schools, they don't have like Cree class and so forth, or Aboriginal studies. So we started this after school program that we got the students involved, the grades 3s and 4s. And we also, at that time, we had the high school students involved. So they were the mentees. So they helped with the program. And they did crafts. They did a lot of things, played games and stuff like that. And it's still happening today. And of course, I stepped away, and other people just take over, and the program still runs to this day.
And from being in that mentoring program, do you have any moments that you've had with interactions within that program that stood out to you that you'll always remember or be fond of?
We're there as adults, coordinating this program. But what I used to find was the little kids, they love playing, they love the crafts and so forth. But what I found was when we brought the teenagers come in there, they're almost looking up to the teenagers. Like the teenagers are the role models for them. That stood out a lot to me. And And now these teenagers that were involved in there, they're adults now. They have their own families.
And of course, not that long ago, back here in December or January, we also got to witness the Wood Buffalo hosting the Arctic Winter Games, which showcased a lot of Indigenous games, such as, stick games, as well as Dene hand games and so forth, along with a lot of Indigenous competitors from the Northwest Territories, from the Yukon, and all over Alberta as well. Were you able to witness that? And if so, what does that mean to you to see Indigenous culture being showcased on a big stage like that?
I think it was phenomenal. We had it was so good to watch the different games, but especially the hand games. I think that was a big hit. Recently here, we hosted our own Dene hand games in our schools, the high schools, and the elementary schools. And the kids loved it. And it wasn't just for the Aboriginal students as well. We invited all nations to come play the hand games. And we're going up to High Prairie here soon because one of the teams won. So they're going to go up to High Prairie to do a hand game competition in High Prairie here next month.
And when you see stuff like that, like the Dene hand games becoming almost like a synonymous event that can be hosted in almost every school for just not even just Indigenous people, but also non-Indigenous people to participate as well, what does that mean to see something like that happen within school bodies?
They have such fun. The students, when they see that, they're learning a lot. They're just having fun The Dene hand game is just a one game. And we've hosted another Indigenous game on numeracy. The counting sticks. There are so many that I was involved in hosting for games, under numeracy. And how they learn as they play, like the stick game, they have a game called stick game. It's counting.
Mm-hmm.
When I was teaching Cree, grade 3, I remember one year I taught grade 3 Cree class. we used to play this one game called stick game, and it was just you know, counting sticks and stuff like that. It's a really, for them, that was a cool game. They called it the grade threes. But the English teacher one day, or the math teacher one day, came to me and said to me, what are you doing with your students? What are you doing with our students? Because these grade threes, I only had about 12 students at the time, would come to my class for half an hour and they'd go back to their math class or whatever. And she would was teaching them math. I think she was teaching them about grouping, you know, grouping whatever. They're doing some a skill on grouping. But those 12 kids that were coming to my classroom for the Cree class and playing that game, they're catching on, like, so quickly, you know, and she couldn't believe it. She said, what are you doing with them? And it was just by playing that one game, that Indigenous game. Like, the kids were playing, but they were also learning without even knowing.
And that's the beauty of, you know, these amazing games, because I know when I participated in the Athabasca Tribal Council's Culture Fest up in Fort McMurray on Sny Hill, it was amazing to witness that, because I didn't even know what hand games were. Next thing you know, I'm sitting there with a drum, and I'm drumming, or I'm participating in the games itself. You know, and in regards to, you know, such events like that happen within Fort McMurray, are there any projects that you have coming up that you would like to integrate or get more involved in within the Wood Buffalo area?
Well, right now, like I said, the hand games are really, really big right now. So we're hoping to, like, have games and compete against, like, even the other school districts, because there's three school districts within this area. There's the Fort McMurray Public, of course, for Catholic schools, and then the Northland School Division as well, you know, so that can be a whole, like, there's so many schools around here that we can host hand games and so forth. And then, of course, we're still going to the land-based learning camps as well, you know, overnight land-based camps. That's big, too.
And, of course, you had said it in an interview way back when that, you know, you were talking about your vision for Indigenous programming is not only that the school district will continue educating students and staff, but also the general public about the true history of Canada's First Nations people and, of course, their many contributions. And so with that vision, are you starting to see that vision come to light in today's times? You know, with the Truth and Reconciliation Movement, the Orange Shirt Days, and, of course, just the integration of the teachings of the cultures across the province of Alberta and Canada.
We start from the schools, right? But, you know, to me, I always say, especially for the teachers, they have to know the culture to be able to teach some of the, you know, the knowledge of our people. So we have to educate the teachers first and foremost. I had the privilege of working with the Alberta Teacher Association. They seconded me back in 2016, and we did some resources for our teachers because Truth and Reconciliation was right at our doorstep, you know, and then the teachers have to integrate that into the school system. So that was a great, great experience for me. I was there for two years developing resources. But the general public is, I think, needs to know a lot about our Canadian history. And with ATC holding those cultural camps, and it's open to everybody, I think that's very important. That's how people learn about different cultures. Not only the missing, murdered woman or Orange Shirt Day, like, we have to celebrate our culture, what we know as people, what kind of, you know, what we learn as people, the goodness of people.
And, of course, it benefits everyone as well. You know, when I went to school, and even while I was going through my K-12, there may be only a couple of pages in a textbook talking about, indigenous culture, the Métis, the Dene, the Stoney, the Blackfoot, everybody that was involved both on Treaty 6, 7, and 8 territory. And now that we see this movement happening of the truth reconciliation and everything else that's going on, we're starting to see a differentiating shift, as you could say, that's happening across the province, as well as, you know, we're seeing more, as you said earlier, hunger for the teachings and everything else. Have you worked alongside, you know, Fort Chip and Fort McKay and also the indigenous communities within Fort McMurray to come up with more ways to help teach and educate those that have indigenous background, but also those that don't have indigenous background as well?
Yeah, when I was first, there was a program I worked for Fort McMurray First Nations back in 97. We just started, and there was a program called Bridging the Gap. We work within the schools, and it's, you know, where they started off slowly, like doing first Aboriginal Day. Like they have an Aboriginal Day once in May or something like. But now it's like every month in the schools. Anyway, that we have different themes. Like September would be Eagle Moon, Eagle. You know the seven teachings, I guess. So there's a lot of integration now within the schools, and then the teachers are learning along with the students. And, you know, and we just got to keep doing this every day, you know, keep moving forward, teaching other people that don't know our culture and they live here in this beautiful country of ours.
And of course, I have to ask, you know, with your other fellow teachers, you know, learning as well as the students are that may not know about the culture, what has been the overall reception from them that want to know and more to know more about how to educate those about the Treaty 7, the Treaty 8, and of course, Indigenous members on province land here in Alberta?
Well, there's a lot of resources now for the teachers to access, you know, which is really helpful for them, because at one point there was not that much resources about. Well, I'm just going to talk about Alberta, I guess. When we did a lot of resources, there's a lot of resources on the different nations, right? It's not just Cree, it's not just Dene, right? There's so many different nations, and there is a lot of resources for the teachers to want to know, and of course. The media, like the YouTube, has a lot of good resources as well there for anybody, for that matter.
I also have to ask as well, I read in a web story that somebody wrote on you that you were smiling from ear to ear when students were taking in Bannock for the first time. What was your reaction to seeing those that haven't experienced Bannock before? They ask the question of, what is that? That looks like bread.
Yeah.
So what was your reaction to that?
It was like, to them, the student, they loved it. Because we taught them about the fire, right? The sacredness of the fire. And there's always teachings behind everything. And then the kids just loved baking the bannock. And that's the only station they wanted to go to. There was different other stations, like the medicine pouch. And then the elder took them for a walk in the woods to teach them about the different medicines that they can use. They got lost in the forest and so forth. Like, there's so much teachings out there, not just in a classroom.
And of course, as well, as an Indigenous instructor yourself, have you also gone on to teach the students, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous, about the importance of smudge and practicing ceremony and the protocol that follows with it as well?
Yeah, right now I'm teaching Aboriginal Studies 10, grade 10 students. So, we talk about spirituality and the difference between spirituality and religion, you know. And then over the years, I've taken to ceremonies. Of course, we had to get consent from the families. So I would take them to different ceremonies, like the sweat ceremony even they participated in. I've done smudge ceremonies in the mornings. I still do that in class. I sometimes take them outside when the weather's nice. But my school is very supportive. I'm allowed to use a smudge in my classroom.
That was Julia McDougall from Mikisew Cree First Nation in Northern Alberta. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, we sit down with Clarence Wolf Lang of Siksika Nation in Southern Alberta.
Well, my traditional name is Sameek Sikh. I mean, it means red crane. My English name is Clarence Wolf Lang. I'm at the present time, I'm a spiritual traditional leader for my people. Been in the societies. Now I'm passing on the teachings of our grandfathers and also doing ceremonies where I'm called. And and I also sit on liaison advisory committees with the province, RCMP, city police, and I also teach now and then at Mount Royal College and other places where I'm called to. So it's my main function is as a traditional spiritual leader.
And so first thing that I'll ask you is can you talk a little bit about your time growing up within Siksika First Nation?
Well, you know, growing up, I guess when I was 4 years old, I was quite involved in. We didn't have electricity. We didn't have all the conveniences. We grew up in a kind of a tough time, making it through the seasons. I have 4 older brothers. I have 1 younger brother and 3 younger sisters. And my father was a World War II veteran. He fought in North Africa, Sicily, and Ortona. But, you know, sometimes some of the things he went through, he's a very angry person when he came back. And we also felt that situation. But all in all, we had a traditional life. And before I was 7, I was sent to Old Sun Indian Residential School. That's an Anglican residential school on our west side of Siksika. The RC boarding school was on our east side. So that's where I would use the word. That's where I got oriented into the white man's way of life. But the sun dances and ceremonies were still going on, powwows. And I was quite at the time, old people, the demographics of old people, about 70% was well over 70, 75 years old. Today, it's gone the other way. 70% is under 25. So there's quite a changeover. I grew up, and that's where I stayed till I reached that grade 5, I believe. And we were test cases for public school. So we were bused to Leeshan, which is just adjacent to the school. And that's where we got a taste of public school, high school in Duclooney on the east side of the reserve. And that's when I started my journey into the public school education. So at that time of my life, I was very much disillusioned and saying, where am I headed? Like, I know my culture. I grew up with my language. The only language I knew was Blackfoot. But eventually, I got pretty well versed in English. That's where my younger days were, county schools and stuff. And later on, I went to high school in Calgary.
And can you talk a little bit about some of your positive influences in life, like some of your mentors that taught you some very valuable life skills or life lessons in your younger years?
Well, you know, like I said, I grew up with I was fortunate to be around when our sacred societies were going on very strong. The Sundance was going on. And I had to kind of like a front seat to all the things that are happening in a traditional way. And my family history on my mom's side, he's with the Eagle Rips clan. My father is with the Hindbow clan. So my one of the things, one of my, I guess, greatest mentors, my mother. My mother went to the RC school, and when my father went to war in 1943, she went to stay with her auntie, who they were very versed in outside education. So she had a chance to go up to grade 11, and she could have graduated in Mitnapur High School, but like everything else, Indian agents said, you're 16 years old, you got to go home. So that stopped that. So she became quite a mentor to me as to what I'm to look at in life, my future. And most of us, my brothers, we were very close to our mother. And plus we had aunties, we had the old people. A lot of the old people still get from here to there in their wagons, and they stop by, and they're very traditional. They always have a good few horses, few cattle. So we grew up in a farm and ranch and community. And our leadership finally broke away from Indian agent in 1969. And so I believe, I would say the old people, the traditional people, were the ones that I really looked up to and really listened to. They would tell me, I'm going to tell you a story. It's not just a story. This story, you're going to use it in your life. And there are things out there you're going to see, like medicine wheels, effigies. Those have marked our land as this is where we traveled for quite a long time. We didn't come from no country. We came from the land. So I would say it's the old people, and especially the spiritual people, were those ones that I really would say were guided me in my life.
And can you talk about the meaning of the name that you were given, which means Red Crane in Blackfoot, and who gave you that name?
Well, you know, when I went overseas in the early 60s, I was with the NATO forces. I was in Germany. That's where I was stationed. But I went on UN peacekeeping missions in the Mediterranean and places where we called to. And I spent quite a bit of time overseas. I'd say about close to 3 years. I came home, and I also wasn't released till 1970. So anyways, when I came home, I became a federal supernumerary special constable. That's the old scouts after when the Northwest Mounted Police came here. But that appointment came from the commissioner of the RCMP. I didn't have to go to depot training. Because of my military background, I just got appointed. I went for refresher courses. I went to the RCMP, and I became what I am, a federal officer. So during that time, I continued my looking after the old people, the young people, visiting with the old people, making sure they're okay. I had full authority and also traveled to other reserves if they needed any manpower to help them. We were able to work on other nations close to us. And then one day we were having an Indian celebration, like our Indian days, at the Treaty Flats. And I was still patrolling around. My mother said, you better get ready. You're going to get a name. Oh, so I got ready, and we went to the teepee of my uncle. And everybody was there, 15 pipe holders, sacred leaders, and the elected chief was there. And that's where I received my name. My name comes from when warriors used to watch our territory stretch to the Red River. We call it Mikotsi-tata. And over time, we had traditional treaties, and it pushed our borders twice. The last one was to the Cypress Hills, just this side of Saskatchewan. So anyways, my name came from my great-great-grandfather, who was sent out to the Red River area to watch our territory. And over the years, he encountered many tribes that that came into that area, and they captured and they took on families. There was Cree, there was Cheyenne, there was Sioux. Whoever they encountered, they even captured some Métis that were coming through. So anyways, that spiritual leader said, I think that's the name that you've earned, because Red Crane, Meek Seacom, was a great warrior. And when he came home, he had over 150 lodges when he came home. And he said, that's the name we'll give you. And the sacred society, the Horn Society, which I was a leader of, also one of the leaders for many years, they, the ones that honored me, with my warrior's headdress. And one of the things they said, the old people, and the grandmothers, was, now you become a chief. That's how you become a chief. And of course, I served in elected council for 20 years of my life. So, and subsequently, that led me to step into the sacred lodge and become a traditional, you might say, grandfather in the Sundance camp, and it was my people. So I had to risk my life like my father, and I received my name with honor, and so everybody knew who I was.
And, you know, you touched a little bit about your experiences within the military, within NATO and stuff like that, with all of those experiences, you know, and also what people may not know is that during your time within the Canadian Regular Armed Forces, you also spent time with the Royal Canadian Horse Artillery, where you earned 3 medals. When you got those 3 medals, Clarence, what was your first reaction to receiving those medals in recognition of what you've done within the Canadian Armed Forces?
You know, I was I served overseas, and one of the things that brought me back was that I want to think of, I'm going to be a career soldier, but I've served enough time to know that it's a very honorable place to be. And I used to watch my father shine up his medals when Remembrance Day. He was a drill sergeant after the war, and I used to admire, and we used to shine them up also for him. And when I received my first one, I automatically thought of the sacrifices that my father, and also with my regiment, some people that I went into tough situations with. And then I received my first one, which is the NATO Special Service Medal with a clasp. And then the Cyprus Medal, and then the other one. Recently, Canada recognized peacekeepers, and we got the Canadian Peacekeeping Service Medal. And then the Aboriginal Veterans commissioned a medal, and I received the Aboriginal War Medal. And just recently, I received the 75th Queen's Platinum Medal on behalf of the Queen. So anyways, I was a cadet when I was in residential school. That's where I began my military experience. And I often thought of, I wonder, gee, maybe someday, maybe I'll receive something for serving in the military. And it was a kind of very honorable moment for me to remember and to stand alongside my father, and we both have a breast full of campaign medals. And my father was very proud of me. And we marched together and with all the other veterans. Oh, you know, it was a highlight in my life. And I went on to serve my people with honor. Any time there's a powwow or anything, I always wear my medals on behalf of all veterans. Doesn't have to be Remembrance Day, because all the war veterans are gone. My last father was one of the last veterans that passed on. So that was a very, might say, it was a very emotional highlight in my life.
That was Clarence Wolfleg of Siksika Nation in Southern Alberta on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Julia McDougall and Clarence Wolfleg. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.